Welcome to Soul Practice, a podcast featuring raw conversations about our crazy world and real practices that keep us grounded deep in our souls. Soul Practice, Raw Conversations, Real Practices is hosted by Kathy Escobar and Phyllis Mathis.
So welcome back to Soul Practice, Raw Conversations and Real Practices. I'm Kathy Escobar.
I'm Phyllis Mathis.
And so we love to just talk about things that we talk about on Mondays. And we don't get together sometimes because of travel schedules and whatnot, but we just were saying before we got on how much we miss it. Like when we don't get together on a Monday, I don't know, we feel like a drought or something.
Yeah. Something big is missing.
Yeah. It's like so embedded. And it's really funny because my dog, Raina, she's a chocolate lab, is conditioned that Phyllis comes into my driveway at a certain time on Monday. And then she has an exact reaction in her body and soul about what we're going to do. And so if Phyllis comes over a different time, it just completely throws Raina off.
And she's so disappointed. Like, you're here, you're what? Where's my leash? Why are we not walking?
It's awesome. But we're kind of the same way. It's like our bodies and our souls are attuned to being together on Mondays. And so we actually just walked, and it's a really snowy day this last few days in Colorado. I mean, who knows what it'll be in a couple of weeks when this episode comes out, but super bright outside, powdery snow. And we walk around this lake that is just, it's a really special place. It always has been to my family because we've always walked around there. But now some of Jared's ashes are there. And it became our COVID spot.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah. And we switched our route for COVID so we could be off the beaten path of humans. And no one's there on a morning like this. So Raina had the whole entire place to herself, and we did too. And a subject comes up pretty much every time. And I know that it's on a lot of people's hearts and minds, and we talk about it more probably than we used to, but it's one of those things that's easy to talk about and harder to do.
Yes.
And it's paradox.
Yes.
It's paradox. And the ability to hold contradicting things, experiences, feelings, the whole thing in one space at the same time, or one body at the same time, or in one relationship at the same time, in one community at the same time, you know, whatever it is. And I think that I first read about paradox when I was in huge faith deconstruction-y stuff. And I can't remember what book it was in that Richard Rohr wrote. I can't remember which one it is. I actually, no, I do know because I quoted it in Faith Shift. It was a newsletter.
Oh.
He talks about it all the time, but there was specifically this piece that he wrote in a newsletter because when I had to do the references, it was super hard to find. I found it.
Yeah.
And they make you do that. They like make you take copies just so you know, like never just like lift things because you have to find your source. And I found it. It was like a weird MailChimp email thing. But the minute I heard it expressed that way, and it was basically when you can hold paradoxes, these contradicting things in the same space as that in yourself, then you can hold it in other people and in the world. So that was a little bit of the blurb. And so that was a long time ago, years and years and years. And now here we are in 2022, and it's gotten more traction, but I didn't really understand it all the way in the way that I do now until Jared died. That there's like no way around all of it in the same space at the same time. And I want to squeeze one out. Mm-hmm. Or the other. Mm-hmm. And we actually attribute sort of negative and positive.
Yeah.
Instead of attributing all of it is what it is. Mm-hmm. And so for the sake of soul practice and you know, raw conversations and real practices, I just think paradox, I've been calling it the practice of paradoxing.
Yeah.
And learning how that it's a practice to learn how to paradox better. And it will help us be more whole and help our soul. Our souls can do it, but our brains can't.
Yeah, that was coming to me when you were talking. And as I've been walking with you through this whole post-Jared phase of your life, reality of your life, that's the thing that it makes me cock my head and just kind of go, how are they doing that? Because your example in grief is that, because I watch you, you know, do beautiful, joyful, happy things, and at the same time, the deepest, most gut-wrenching kinds of grief, and going from one to the next and back into the next, like in one event or one kind of moment in time. And I just think, I don't know how that happens, but when you just said that, I think that's the key, that paradox, being able to do paradox is not a mental exercise. Mm-hmm. And it has been for me, because, you know, I can say that all the time, psychologically, dialectics are two things that, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's just like paradox. And the thing is that kind of thing will break your brain. Like if you try to handle it with your mind is not equipped to make sense of that. It wants to either or it. Mm. And so we're always like swinging. If we're only handling that with our minds, then it's like a pendulum swing that we are on. And like, is it this or is it that? Is it good? Is it bad? Is it hard or is it wonderful? Is it horrible or is it beautiful? What is it? Because the mind is always trying to do us a favor by simplifying everything and making it really efficient and understandable. Mm. But certain things can't be done that way, right?
Yeah, totally. And it's like, it makes sense that we would try and do that, because that's, if we were like summing up soul practice in one sentence, it's almost that.
Yeah.
It's like getting out of our head and into our guts, mm-hmm. our soul, and then having that transform the way we live. Mm-hmm. But it's so interesting. Like, it just is such a first reflex. And I, as you were talking, I am so struck with how religious systems really is, not all religious systems, but we come from the Christian stream, an origin one that hates paradox.
Well, and that's what I signed up for.
Yeah.
I just have to say that's, you know,
totally.
Now I criticize it for being, you know, either or this is the right way, or here's the path that you don't have to worry, because we'll tell you everything that's right. And then you just go along and you're good.
Yeah.
And that's what I gave my whole soul to, for that reason, because humaning is terrifying. Mm-hmm. And the world we live in is a little bit, and I want something that will reduce it down to something that I can hold on to and be certain about, and let everything else just be not right and just scoop it right out of my world, my existence.
Like, think about how many people we said early, because I just speak for me, in my evangelical days, I was like, it's just black and white.
yeah.
And I have to say, because I went back in my faith shift, healing, deconstruction and healing process, I went back and made amends to some people. And one was my mom. And she listened, so I'm saying this for you, Grandma Karen, is that years ago, I was like, it says it in the Bible, it's black and white. And she's like, no, it's not. It's totally gray. No, it's right here. I'm pointing to the words. And she was wise, because she didn't have that construct. And so, and I just like went after it. And it was so fucking dumb. but it was all I knew because I was grasping onto something. I did not want paradox.
Yes.
I definitely wanted like rails and clarity and certainty and foundation. And so anyway, I went back and said, I'm really sorry. That was really lame later. And that was just this phase that I was in, and I really regret it. But I would say that, well, yes, I regret my actions related to that. But it was just part of the process. And I actually don't agree with some of Richard Rohr's stuff in this department on human development related to faith, because he talks a lot about like, you have to go through the certainty phase to get to the uncertainty phase. Okay. And I just think, I like my friend Cindy Brandt's material on this related to parenting kids. And, you know, she's not a therapist, she's a practitioner, but where she talks about kids are amazing. Like, they can hold things that we think they can't.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm not talking about concrete things about, you know, don't, that's hot. And yeah. I'm not talking about safety things. I'm talking about nuances spiritually. Nuances in the world, non-binary ways of viewing things. Like, kids actually can hold that and have that not be the end of the world. And I know that this is, I don't want to get off track on it. I just want to say that it was part of a lot of our stories is we needed it and we held on to it, and then it outlasted its usefulness. Mm-hmm. But I do wonder of some of the harm that happens.
Yeah.
When we're not trained, we're only trained in that. Mm-hmm. And then the human experience comes and it
blows our minds.
It does.
We get paralyzed.
Yeah.
We can't function.
And then we really find horrible ways to cope.
Yeah. Because that's really interesting. I didn't know that, what you just said, that kids have a capacity to hold spiritually in some, you know, way, nuance.
Yeah, she's good. She said, yeah, she has this whole thing on the spiritual playground thing. And
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I think the thing that what you're saying, it harms us, is that it creates actually an addiction to certainty that we can't, that we have to break up with. And it, when we get to the place, if we've been like super certain, whether it's religious or not, whether it could be scientific, it could just be cultural, it could be all kinds of ways that we anchor ourselves in a kind of certainty that eliminates other possibilities. Mm-hmm. Then when that system breaks, whatever it is, we're in shock.
Yeah.
And the shock can last a long time. So we lose time kind of going in disillusionment.
Mm.
And disillusionment can take you down lots of really bad paths. And so Kathy and I both work a lot with people who are disillusioned by a religious system. And sometimes it really is a disordered way of having lived. And then when that falls apart, there's a lot of really bad stuff that happens because no one taught them properly. No one taught me properly. Spirituality isn't black and white.
Mm.
And it isn't, and it, we don't like empower our other ways of knowing. So being human, so you're talking about other ways of knowing, and paradox really has to be lived and experienced in other below the neck.
Yeah.
And so like watching you guys do these swings from falling on the floor, like sobbing in the depths of grief, and trying to understand, and then being in communities and experiencing these wonderful, like beautiful openings of something real, you know, in the same day, maybe.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's like, it does something, it blows your mind if you're trying to understand it, but it's expanding your heart, your soul, your spirit, and your bodily capacity is being transformed. Maybe.
Mm.
So that's what's like resonating with me is that being human is so much more below the neck than we thought.
Yeah.
And we don't know how to do that. No one ever trained us to do that. So we pretty much have to hit a wall or have to be disillusioned in some way, or be, most of us, come face to face with the fact that our mind isn't serving us anymore.
Mm.
And can't drive things anymore, can't figure things out for us in certain realms. And the realm of being totally human, like fully integrated human, or being spiritual in any way, the mind can't drive that. It can only serve that. And we don't know how to do that without some sort of hitting a wall or having a breakdown or having a huge realization or something that wakes up these other ways of knowing or hijacks the brain. Like for me, it was like, I was so exhausted trying to figure out my life. And I was so disappointed and heartbroken and disillusioned and all kinds of things sort of falling apart that I just got so tired. My brain was so tired. I just quit.
Mm.
I had to. And just was like ground to halt.
Yeah. You just couldn't.
I just couldn't. And so that was my little breakdown. And then I realized there might be other things going on, you know, that my mind couldn't understand. And then my mind, my certainty, my addiction to certainty and my need to figure out all the things actually had become the problem instead of the solution.
Mm.
And that was a huge thing. So it's like I had a brain injury or something. And I had to kind of listen for other things that don't talk very well.
Yeah, they're not crystal clear.
No.
They're fuzzier, but they're so much more sustaining. And you can't, they're like, I'm not going to say they're completely intangible, but you know, they're different.
They speak a different language.
Yes. Yeah. That is so good. And makes me think as you were talking too, that this is like back to the non-judgment thing is that we are trained, and certainly, I mean, I think all people are for sure, you know, across genders and realities and experiences, that certain things are good and certain things are bad. And certain things are, you know, okay, and certain things are kind of not. And so we evaluate them. So if there's big feelings, okay, what do we do first thing? I got to figure it out, how to get rid of this big feeling. And so, you know, a lot of it is brain damage, where it is actually unhealthy coping to squeeze out the feeling. And then we evaluate, oh, it's the pursuit of just the good things. Like, that's where I have to put all my energy in. And find a way to have more joy, more light, less heart, you know, whatever the thing is. And I think the part that the skill that I hope in a super tangible, practical way, we can help everybody learn more, starting with myself, but I'm thinking about young people too, especially like young adult kids or young kids and young adults, is that, you know, it's fascinating. I'm going to say this too, about a more non-binary world, still on this one level, but ultimately there's this not enough practice on how to hold that non-binariness in our souls.
Yeah. Well, breaking the addiction to the security we get by figuring things out all the time is a huge process that needs to happen at some point. If we're drawn that way, like hopefully there are people who are growing up without the need to be binary in their thinking about all kinds of things. But for those of us who bought it, got addicted to it, crashed into the wall, got up again and went down another path. It's like breaking that addiction or breaking up with knowing is terrifying, but liberating at the same time. And the thing that really pivoted my life was this quote from David White that I always say all the time. What is precious inside us does not care to be known by the mind in ways that diminish its presence. Mm. So that just hit me like, oh, there's some part of me that's there alive and doesn't want the mind to fuck it up, basically.
Yeah.
And so that gave me so much hope. I just thought, well, how do I be that part? I don't know, but I'll sit here in the dark. And that's part of my story was I just had to, when my brain like crashed into itself and then died in a sense, like just went, we're done. We don't know. I just thought, oh, well, that's not the end. Like, I don't have to figure it out or else.
Yeah.
Like there's something else that's happening in me and has been there the whole time waiting for me to just, and rolling its eyes maybe, to just be like, oh my God, could you just stop? Could you just please, you know, so
it's exhausting watching
it's
you.
Just watching you. Yeah. And that's how it felt. Like there was this part of me that was just waiting for me to listen and listen to a language I didn't know, which was my heart, my intuition, my body, and my soul.
Mm.
And all of those parts of me were encompassed by, really, my soul.
Yeah.
And I was trying to make my soul my head. And so I can't overstate the weirdness of that feeling and the kind of terror, a little bit of terror combined with hope that happened when my system crashed and I just went, I don't know a fucking thing.
Mm.
And I'm depressed. I don't know how to solve my problems. And I don't know, but there's a little candle in me, or there's a little, and my job is to sit here and listen differently and not do much until those parts become online somehow.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I really love the thought of how really it's in us.
It's already there.
It's not something we have to grasp and or it's find. Out there, find. It's actually in us. And that is what amazes me about humaning. Because I'm so fascinated by the fragility of life and how humans are so fragile and so strong.
Yeah.
And like our bodies, there's just so many things that just I'm amazed by. And that it is in us. It is in us, and that we have to respect that we're in a season of human evolution and history and culture that has to adapt. And that's, I think, part of the rub is that, you know, we had ways of coping and they were systemic ways of coping because of things. And now we're in this stage.
A deconstructing in lots of ways.
Yes, it's not just faith. Like it's this huge shift, and that's, you know, there's lots of, you know, Wilbur stuff and spiral dynamics and all that kind of stuff that, you know, it's fine. It's all language that helps us. But ultimately, we all have to, in our own little worlds, find ways to hold not just two contradicting things, but multiple. And that has like the symbol of an ampersand and sign has really, I bought one at King Supers. Has like, my King Supers is like Target.
Yeah.
And so I don't need another thing in my house, but I will tell you, I walked by and I just said, I have to have this.
What is it?
Like it's an and sign.
And it's in wood or something?
It's just a black block of wood, like about 6 inches. And I got it a few days after my friend Jenny died. And I just was like, I have to have that. I was really drawn to it, and I have it right in the center of my living room kind of area. And I look at it every day and I'm like, that's how I'm going to survive the next season. And it's not just two, it's not just grieving and living. I mean, those are two that are really mm-hmm. have been present in mm-hmm. my life, but it's actually like so many ants, all the things, and that it is a lot. So I want to say about the practice of paradoxing is that it takes practice to have it not be quite so exhausting, because when it's new, and I remember this early on grief, I was like, this is exhausting. I feel like my soul coming this way and then my soul swinging that way, and it takes its toll. Mm-hmm. And I asked my therapist about this, about after Jenny died. I said, I'm kind of nervous. Like, is there going to just be a time that the next thing just breaks me?
Yeah.
Because my mother-in-law died and Jenny died. And you know what? She said something really important, because she's like, I don't think so. I don't think so. It's going to make me cry. I don't think so. It's like, as painful and horrible as all these things are, it's like, you are learning how to integrate it. And it doesn't mean it doesn't hurt. It doesn't mean it isn't so hard. It doesn't mean you don't have overwhelming grief, but you're learning. And I think I have that binary thinking that goes, the next thing, mm-hmm. what am I avoiding? And the next thing's going to push me over the edge. Because that's, instead of going, you know, we are meant, we have the capacity as humans to do it together. See, like, I can't do it by myself. Like, I need you, and I need my community. I need other humans who are trying to practice this also to do it. But it was comforting to me, because it made me realize how I just have that, as much, no, it doesn't matter how much work I've done, that binary thing comes in.
Well, and fear comes in, because we still are managing it with our heads. Yeah. But what I think I've observed from you and what I'm learning inside myself, I can feel it in my chest, in my heart. It's like an expansion of capacity, of like emotional and spiritual being capacity. I can feel it. It kind of hurts that, you know, like if this capacity lives in my chest, and I had a, you know, football size capacity for holding hard things and beautiful things. And I mean, it's painful to long for things. It's painful to hope for things, and it's painful to lose too. So when you let that, when you welcome it in a way, or you don't resist it, it's not exactly welcoming sometimes, but if you just don't resist it, I can feel it in my body, and it kind of hurts. It's like, but it's expanding. If I think about it that way, like, okay, my capacity for uncertainty and risk and hope and presence is expanding in this thing I'm in that I can't figure out.
Mm.
And so that's just in the heart space. Mm. It, the expanded capacity. And I don't know about auras or energy fields or weird things like that, but I kind of think that something real is really expanding this capacity to hold and make stronger. So when you said, is the next thing going to break me? And she's like, I don't think so. I'm like, I know it's not going to break you, Kathy. Like, I can feel that, because I've been with it. And it's inspired me to be with hard things, and I can feel what that feels like here. Mm. And I can imagine what it feels like in your, you know, chest area when you're.
And I'm like, it depends on what it is.
It depends on what it is. Yeah. And we can't hold all the things all the time. But if I think about it, how it's expanding my capacity, and just living in that is an expansion of some kind of actual power.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so healing. And, you know, to kind of wrap up kind of the Richard Rohr thing is that, you know, if we can learn how to hold it in ourselves, then we can hold it in the world and in our relationships and in other people. And I always want to be cautious. I always want to have a word for these shifty kind of people. If you're in destructive systems that, or getting out of them, like you were told, well, the church is made up of imperfect people. You know, that is a tactic. Okay. <Yeah. laughs> That's a shame tactic to have you ignore fundamentally wrong things.
Yeah.
So please no, like erase that, because that's not at all what we're talking about.
As a reason to stay.
Yes, yeah. Please no. But it is true. And I remember seeing this in parenting, like, oh my gosh, I do a lot better in holding paradox in other places than in my kids in general, especially when they were little. Mm-hmm. It's like, I just want you to be like a totally integrated grown-up when you're six. Because it would make my life so much easier.
I was just going to say that. That's so much better for me.
Yes. And so like really learning how to allow for other people's humanity. Because, and that's why doing our own work first alongside, it's all simultaneous, but like it really helps, because that judgment and like non-ability to do that is reflected in our other things. And we really, like, everyone benefits, and we can actually then, back to your presence is everything. It does help us be more present. Yeah. Because we're actually not trying to squeeze those things out in other people.
Yeah. We're not trying to reduce stuff down and make it efficient and make it manageable and controllable.
Yeah, totally. Okay. So we end soul practice with one last little thought on the soul and one practice to consider. So paradoxing, practice of paradoxing, soul, what's something to linger?
Well, I mean, I could almost say the same thing every time, but just acknowledging that there is this part of me that is alive and well, and just waiting for me to get off my addiction to certainty, to be able to actually enliven me.
Mm. Yeah. Love it. We're going to say anything else?
So, no, just remember what is precious inside us. Mm. It's precious inside. There is a place that is precious, that's developing. It doesn't need any more input from your head, from your whatever, ego, whatever. There. So our job is to kind of allow and let go, listen and be, you know, try to be with our souls somehow.
So good. We never plan anything. We just take a topic. And while you were talking, this is the practice. Read this poem by Rumi. This is your practice. Because it came to my mind. And then maybe when you're all done, write out all your ants. Write out all your ants right now. Okay. And just see what comes.
Yeah.
Right now, life is. Right now, I'm holding. Right now. Yes. All of them. But this will be our closing. The Guest House by Rumi. Who? Sufi mystic. Mm-hmm. Okay. The mystics get this. Like this is, you know, this is part of their gig that we didn't learn from till now. The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house, empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice. Meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond.
Wow.
All right. We're glad you're with us in the room.
I love hate that.
That's another conversation.
Yeah, another conversation.
Kathy Escobar and Phyllis Mathis write, speak, pastor, and counsel, and are dedicated to creating spaces that foster healing and change. You can learn more at kathyescobar.com and phyllismathis.com. Keep listening to your soul and keep practicing.